email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
This weekend, the Echoes Festival takes place in Dalkey. It's a beautiful celebration of Maeve Binchy's life and work. There's going to be loads of conversations, interviews and readings. And here to tell us a little bit more about it is Maeve's niece, Sarah Binchy. Good afternoon, Sarah.
Good afternoon.
This is very odd for Sarah and I because we meet each other on the corridor all the time in RTE and we say hello to each other, but we've never actually had a chat. So the first time we're having a chat, Sarah, is on air.
I know, and I'm in and out of these studios all the time with guests. And, you know, it's one thing I'm always saying to people when they're sitting there white-faced and kind of going, I'm so nervous, and I'm saying, don't be nervous. And now I'm on the other side of the fence, which is rare enough for me. So it's good.
So how many nieces and nephews did Maeve have? Did you do the count on it?
Well, in the immediate family, just myself and my brother, and then my cousin William, who's a bit younger than us. So Maeve, there's three sisters and one brother. So that was it. So you can imagine that we were very privileged.
Yes.
That is not to say that Maeve and Gordon didn't have a huge number of and don't have young people in their lives.
Yes.
Cousins, children, friends, children, godchildren.
Because they never had children of their own.
No. And, you know, Maeve would talk about that and she would, you know, she said, like, you could repine, you could mourn, but really what she and Gordon did was borrow other people's children. And she used to say, I love borrowing them in their teenage years when their parents are exhausted by them. And she was a teacher first and foremost before she ever became a journalist. She sort of fell into journalism by accident. But I think that the quality of a teacher never really left her because she could see the best in you. She would mentor you so easily, really. And I think her ability to guide and shape, I mean, she was only itching to do it, really, with anyone she met. But with young people in particular, where, you know, she could see all the things they're getting wrong. And rather than focus on that, she'd see inner qualities, you know, and she'd be
potential.
And you know, she would treat you like you had a lot to offer.
Mm. And were you around her a lot?
Well, more so as years went by, because when we were young, Maeve and Gordon were living in London, so she was, you know, they'd be over a fair bit, but you know, she was in contact all the time, and she had a rule which we've talked about often, and she did as well, of stay in touch, writing a postcard. When texting came along, she became a great texter, but she was a postcard woman because you do it so quickly. Just stay in touch. So in a way, I grew up with Maeve in stereo because she was always a postcard on the whole table. I'd be trying to figure out her writing. She wrote so fast. Then she had a column in the Irish Times, which you may remember, which was always very chatty and kind of like about her week and, you know, something the person said and the hairdresser, that kind of thing. And then she'd be there in person. But she and Gordon, over the years, the facts liberated them to live in Ireland more and more. They bought a house in 1980 in Dalkey. They still, but their working lives were in London, but gradually through the 80s, they moved home. So that's when we saw more and more of her, me and my brother. So we were just in time to for her Maeve's great job creation schemes,
which were
waitressing and waiting at her parties.
Yeah.
Sometimes we'd be the only people our age, you know. So she'd find a role for us.
But and she had afternoon parties.
Afternoon parties, right. Pack everyone off to the pub by 6-7 o'clock,
uh-huh.
Which was next door, which was very well
Finnegan's.
Located. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But also, you know, when she and Gordon got laptops and things, they were kind of, you know, ahead of the posse on this stuff. But she kept me and my brother over and she said, how do we work this? You know, she left us feeling we were quite wise advisors
and
to
contributing
her.
To her
yes,
life. Yes,
yes.
Which was lovely.
Exactly.
Like she'd be well into WhatsApp if she was still alive, wouldn't she?
Oh, totally.
Yes.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, great texture. Great.
Yes. And,
kind
and
of,
that'd be the spine of one of the books, the WhatsApp group, I would imagine.
I'd say so, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, she'd be at the forefront of social change, I think, of just watching what's going on. She wouldn't necessarily feel she has to take part in everything, but she certainly she wouldn't miss anything.
I was listening back to, she did Desert Island Discs in 1990. I don't know if she did it again.
Don't think so.
No. And her lovely voice.
Yeah.
and it's there and it's BBC quality. And I was just thinking, firstly, do you ever listen back to her talking? Do you listen back to interviews?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, I mean, there was a nice documentary made a couple of years ago here in RTE, but and maybe 10 years before that, there was another one, which I think is on YouTube. And I have looked at that. It's my dad is on it contributing. It was, I think, Noel Pearson's company that made it. But it's I like that one, yes, as well. Yeah.
And this is going a strange place. But bear with me, Sarah, because there was a guy, I saw a report on the Guardian newspaper. So this tech guy has used AI, right, to have his mother's voice on demand.
Yeah.
His dead mother.
Yeah.
So he can ring her up and she says things that she never said before. Anyway, that's not what I'm saying. But audiobooks, they could easily, and to a high quality, have Maeve read her books now, audiobooks.
I don't know. I mean, I think, well, I'll tell you, the book on one, you know, I know Evening Class, I think Seamus Hosie, producer, produced
a
fantastic,
yes.
And so that's in,
yes,
our archive.
Yes.
Wouldn't mind hearing that again.
Yes.
There's a lot of audio out there of her, but I suppose I feel her voice as clearly to me when I read her, and it's the voice in your head. You know, and I find she's available very much in any of the novels, in the short stories that I'll be talking about on a panel with Niall McMonagall, Jan Carson and John Patrick McHugh on Saturday. The short stories, I was rereading a few of them just in the past couple of days, and they're so fresh because, it, you know, the way Maeve started to write is the way she always wrote, which was, and we were talking about it just before... just during the break, like no fuss, no ornamentation, no showing off, and no posh voice.
And
you
I
know
what I didn't know, because I thought it was, and you said she stumbled into it.
Well, I won't say stumble, that sounds clumsy.
But that lovely yeah. story about the letter yeah. written from the kibbutz.
Yes. So she was working as a teacher and had long summer holidays, and she had a great sense of adventure, and she travelled all over the world. She did all sorts of things. But she used to write home to her anxious, somewhat overprotective parents just to reassure them everything was fine, and just pouring off the page all the descriptions of what was going on. And they were so impressed. They took one of those letters, the one from the kibbutz in Israel, and they had it printed in a newspaper. And she came home to a check that, as far as I know, was equivalent or even more to a week's pay as a teacher at the time.
£13.
Yeah, something like that. And she kept doing it. And she even took advantage of the bank strike in the late 1960s when people had to get checks cashed in businesses where they knew. So she basically drew on a non-existent, you know, amount of money in her account to travel all the way to Hong Kong. And she had a great summer, but she came back to a meeting with her bank manager and he was thumping the table going, you know, you are so overdrawn. So she wrote piles of features. So necessity was part of it as well. And then gradually took the leap to go into journalism full time. And
fiction. And that lovely description of writing as if you're writing, because the letter was written to her family.
Yeah.
And she continued to write her novels that way.
I think so.
Not overly ornate, not worrying about adjectives.
And with a sense of the other person.
Yes.
And I think that's very interesting for you and me working in radio. And I produce a short story competition in here. And I...
And Sunday Miscellany.
Yes, that too. But the Frances McManus RTE short yeah. story. But always, you know, I think sometimes when people sit down to write something for the page, they're kind of almost communing with themselves. But if you're thinking about a listener... or indeed a reader, it pulls your communication kind of tight, I think. And you get rid of fluff and you just go straight to that listener. So I feel like a lot of her stories really would work really well on the radio, actually.
Yeah. So it's this weekend.
Yes.
Echoes Festival out in Dalkey. It's the 10th year, which is hard to believe.
Right.
And you're going to be there. Cecilia Hearn's going to be there. You mentioned John Carson, Colm O'Regan, Liz Nugent, Oliver Callan, Adele Coffey, Gordon Snell, of course, and yourself, which is great.
Yeah.
And how do people find out where they can get tickets?
I think it's at dalkeycastle.com. There's still tickets for this Saturday. You can get a morning or afternoon ticket. So there's various panels. There's coffee and very nice scones, I'm just going to say. I think there's a great play, double bill play the night before, booked out, but Saturday still available.
Sarah Binchy, thank you very much. Thank you. Today's program was brought to you by WhatsApp. Oh, there you go. Look at them coming in loud and clear. Yes. Sarah and Cormac are on the way on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.